This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I am joined, not from Whakatane, but from Auba Hall, Dunedin, by Mawera Karatai. Kia ora, Mawera.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. It seems like only yesterday that we went for a walk together.
We did. We had an amazing walk yesterday. We walked the Karatai Trail out on the peninsula. It was amazing. What a great way to spend Waitangi Day.
And particularly significant on Waitangi Day. Why is that?
Because Karutai, my ancestor, of whom I'm a direct descendant, signed the Treaty of Waitangi on the other side of the peninsula from where we were yesterday, at Weller's Rock.
Presumably the track has got some connection. I wonder what that is. We should look that up.
I wonder what it is too. I actually meant to have a look at that last night, in case you would ask me about that. But I didn't get around to it. I think I slept instead.
Other than those of us who are having a very pleasant walk, it was a particularly charged Waitangi Day this year.
It was, but it was quite interesting because I've been reading the accounts of a lot of my mates who are Māori who were just so blown away by the support of non-Māori, like unbelievable support, the likes of which we have never seen before on Waitangi Day. Our allies came out in force yesterday with a determination that they're not going to let this government do what it wants to do, which is try and wipe Māori out of our legislation and take away our identity. It's like a recolonisation. It's bloody terrible, really.
I quite like the increasing recognition of that allyship.
Yeah, it's nice, eh?
Because people aren't pretending to be Maori, but neither are they not welcome in the conversation.
That's right, and there's been Maori. I've seen that change. I've seen just such a huge shift as Maori have started to feel safer in their relationships with their allies. There's two parties to the treaty. There's Māori and there's non-Māori. And that means that everybody's important in the relationship. The treaty doesn't seek to take away anybody's rights. It gives rights to everybody. And I think that's where the likes of David Seymour have got it just so wrong. He just really, truly doesn't understand what partnership is.
Well, he does. He's trying to redefine it as nothing.
Yeah, which is odd. I just don't get that. I feel sorry for him, actually. I really, truly do feel sorry for him.
Do you think he really does believe it, or is he playing to a crowd?
Oh, I think that he believes it at some level, but definitely playing to the crowd, whoever's funding his party. And we see that with New Zealand First. We all know that about New Zealand First, is that they're always about where does the money come from. But yeah, it's kind of sad to see David Seymour go in that direction as well. But he's a career politician.
He's also Maori, and so is Winston
so
Peters.
So is Winston, yeah. Isn't it sad?
But isn't that, weird that the drive for undermining is coming from within?
It's when you look at the disconnect between the reality of life for most Māori in this country and those two as career politicians who are used to having quite a substantial income and the respect of people I think they've just completely lost touch.
But talking about Weller's Rocks, let's have the first of our music choices. Let's have the Wellerman. We're going to have the Fisherman's Friend's version.
There once was a ship that put to sea. The
correct.
Name of the ship was the Belly of Tea. The winds blew up her bow, dipped down.
Oh, blow me, bully boys, blow. Hey! Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
She hadn't been 2 weeks from shore when down on her a right whale bore. The captain ordered all hands and swore
he'd take that whale in tow. Oh! Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
Before the boat had hit the water, the whale's tail came up and caught her. All hands to the side harpooned and fought her
when she dived down below. Oh! Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
No line was cut, no whale was freed. The captain's mind was not on greed, but he belonged to the whalerman's creed.
She took that ship in tow. Oh! Soon may the whalerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
For 40 days or even more, the line went slack, then tight once more. All boats were lost, there were only four,
but still that whale did go. Oh! Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
As far as I've heard, the fight's still on. The line's not cut, the whale's not gone. The Wellerman makes his regular call
to encourage the captain, crew and all. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Soon may the Wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go.
I like the fact that the Fisherman's Friends are singing about the Wellerman, because it brings together the two sides of me.
That's so nice.
This is our show number 504.
Holy guacamole. Remember when you didn't think we were going to get to 50?
Exactly. Exactly. So this is four more than a celebration at 500. That we didn't have.
Yeah, because you were away in India, I think.
And more to the point, I came back with COVID.
Oh, that's right. And then New Year happened.
So we had a great plan to do a show where we got people that had been on the show to give us a 2-year-on, 3-year-on, 4-year-on update. But I was just so sick. And that didn't happen. And it kind of seems weird to think about celebrating show number 504. Yes. If you don't celebrate it at 500, then you've kind of missed that opportunity.
Oh, it's better late than never, though, eh?
But that does mean that we're coming up with a year anniversary. Maybe we should actually do it this time.
Oh, I think we should. I think it would be really neat to do that. And then we have to start planning for our 1,000th.
Now, I seriously don't think that's going to happen. Well, it would be a long way off if we carry on with one show a week.
It would be.
It helps if you're doing 5 shows a week like we did for so long, to it really rattles through the numbers.
Oh, okay. So we'll plan for our anniversary then. And it would be really neat. We should get Steve Henry to come back and Tahu, the four of us.
And Liesl.
Oh, and Liesl as well, of course.
Liesl, who has graduated with her doctorate.
Oh, that's so exciting for her.
So that would be a good update to have.
That would be really neat. Let's do that, because that's coming up next month, is it?
March. Must be March. We should know this.
We should, but the years have just gone rolling by so jolly fast, and so much has happened in both of our lives in that time.
So much has happened in the world's lives in that time.
It has. And our kids have all grown up a lot more. And Lucy started school. And Jack started high school.
Yeah.
And did your son get his job?
We don't know yet. He's got a second interview.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
So Henry finished university.
Henry's working for an aerospace company.
Oh my gosh. Even when you think about that stuff, it's pretty amazing stuff just looking at the transformation in our kids' lives in that time that we've been recording this show.
We're talking about making a rangatahi journal.
Yes.
And as is the way with all journals, the first edition might be somewhat stacked with friends and relatives to make sure that we actually get content for the first one. And I'm pretty sure Henry can write a reflective piece about the moral dilemmas that he has about wanting to work in aerospace but not work for the military.
Yeah, that would be really interesting, because these are the things that our kids face. Our kids these days are so deeply principled. I really love the way that they view the world and the way they challenge and push back, and they're just no longer willing to just kind of walk by stuff. I've said to Jack many times through his life that the reality you walk past is the reality you accept. And what I see in this generation of our young people is they're not willing to accept that. They know that we're leaving them with so many problems, and they want to start solving those problems from very early ages in their lives. They feel like they have the right to do that, and I believe they do.
Let's play the persuasions. People, get ready.
Oh, very appropriate.
That's why I picked it.
All aboard, get on board. All aboard, get on board.
There's a train coming somewhere down the track. The people that ain't ready better step in back. This train has been running since time began. It's running on the love of your fellow man. All aboard,
all aboard,
you better get on board. All aboard,
all aboard,
child, you better get on board. People, get ready, there's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. All aboard, child, you better get on board. All aboard, Lord, you better get on board. People, get ready, the train is going to Jordan. It's picking up passengers coast to coast. Faith is the key, it opened the doors for boarding. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. I truly believe that one day the world will be full of love. I truly believe. There ain't no room for the hopeless sinner, one who would hurt all mankind just to save his own. We should have pity on those, cause their chances grow thinner. There's no hiding a place amongst the kingdom's throne. All aboard, child, you better get on board. 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 All aboard, Lord, you better get on board. All aboard, Lord, you better get on board. There's a train coming down the track. The people that ain't ready got to step in. Lord, the train's been running since time began. It's running on the love of your fellow man. All aboard, child, you better get on.
the Boom Booms there. We were talking about the Rangitaki Journal. Where'd that come from?
Yeah. Well, when I started my role with GNS, which is about a year ago, or just a little bit over a year ago, I came onto a project called Our Changing Coast. And my job in the project, it's an MB funded, Endeavour funded project. And my role is to solve the problem of enabling our rangatahi with ways of overcoming, in particular, climate anxiety. So I spoke to a lot of rangatahi and the people who support them over the last year. And the theme that keeps coming up is this sense of nobody listens to me. I don't have any way of being able to communicate my concerns and you know, let the world know these are the problems and actually seek help to solve them. So when I was talking to you about that, Sam, 6 months or so ago, we kind of tossed around the idea then of having a journal or some way of being able to formally publish. And then in my work with the University of Otago, I'm teaching action research. That's what I run a paper, Contemporary Issues in Sustainability, and it's an action research-based project. And when I put those two things together, I thought, why aren't we teaching action research to our kids right from primary school? Such a simple, wonderful way where the researcher is at the heart of their own research if they choose to be. And so when we came back together and talked about this again, a journal fell out of that. So since then, it's progressed to big yeses from everybody, apart from the one that we're just waiting for now. So when we've gone to an established journal and said, okay, we'd like to be able to pick up what you're doing and put this in it. And if they say yes, then we're good to go. And if they say no, then we'll just find something else. Yeah,
and
it's pretty great.
We're intending having a rangatahi editorial board.
Yes, fully rangatahi editorial board supported by Pākehi or the grown-ups. What we're talking about is, you know, that rangatahi age group that goes from about 10 to about 30-ish, and making sure that the 10-year-olds are represented on their editorial board as well, so that everybody right through the whole age spectrum is in there with this beautiful Tuakana Taina model that we've talked about so many times on this show over the years, where the older are supporting the younger and the younger are supporting the older, that co-learning, co-teaching relationship, so that as the older rangatahi move into their pākehi phase of life, the younger ones are coming up behind them, ready to fill the gaps there.
Let's have Jen Wigmore, Written in the Water.
Love it.
Under cold summer skies, I was told not to love him. I was told not to try. I was lonely, the only, till he said he'd be mine. He will leave me for younger. He will leave me to cry. Cut the knife a little deeper. Count the days I survive. Yeah, it's written in the water. Yeah, it's everywhere I go. Telling me that I should leave you.
You were in Wellington last week. What were you doing there?
Last week I was being a goddess of hydrogen in a team of amazing women. So I've been doing a bit of work in the research space of green hydrogen and the social impact of that, supporting a master's learner finishing his master's of sustainability, and also just working with a social science team. It was very interesting being in a room of 200 or so physical scientists, and you know, like, it just seems to be that there's a lot of room for change in the air at the moment. And what I was amazed by was how willing the physical scientists were to consider our perspective as social scientists. That's a big change that I've noticed over the last few years. It's always been that they didn't really have too much regard for our perspective and regarded what we did as a lot of black magic and witchcraft. But that's definitely changing. And they wanted to know what we thought and what we observed, and they wanted to know what the community, how the community was engaging with the ideas of green hydrogen. I've got some pretty serious reservations about us embracing this as a way forward. It's a tool in the toolbox, but it's not the tool to fix all things.
Is it just avoiding the issue? Because we're not actually addressing consumption, we're just changing to a different form of consumption.
Yep, definitely. But the other thing that it does is it puts our fragile energy system at further a risk as it becomes a hungry mouth to feed. And that's always the worry to me, is that we spend a lot of money on infrastructure and then we're kind of obligated to run with something that when we're running into drought years like what we've got coming up now. As I flew down the country the other day, all I saw was brown. Like, the whole country is very brown. Even with the bit of rain that we've had, everything's brown. And we've had like 3 green years in a row with so much rain everywhere. And I think we very quickly become complacent and we forget what it is when we have the blackouts, when there isn't enough energy to provide, especially in the cities. And we're headed rapidly towards that again. Then we start talking about having a hydro infrastructure to support a green hydrogen production. I get a bit worried about that.
Is there a particular use case? Is it like aimed at, I don't know, long haul trucking or something? Or is it being seen as a replacing petrol all over?
The conversation is across the board. So looking at household heating, it's already being used in trucking now. There is a significant trucking firm in Southland that has already embraced it because it's really cut down their emissions and they're really loving it. They're fully committed to it. Manufacturing want to use green hydrogen and of course for feeding energy into the grid. Yeah, so they want a lot of science wants to use green hydrogen as a battery, so excess energy used to make the hydrogen, then the hydrogen then becomes a battery. But it's not easy to store hydrogen.
Let's have Right Said Fred, Deeply Dippy. Yeah. Which is not a comment on green hydrogen, although it might be.
It might be. Deeply dippy.
Deeply dippy about the curve you got. Deeply hot, hot for the curve you got. Deeply dippy about the fun we had. Deeply mad, mad for the fun we had. Oh, my love, I can't make head nor tail of passion. Oh, my love, let's set sail for seas of passion now. Deeply dippy about the way you walk, a contact sport, let the neighbors talk. Deeply dippy, I'm your Superman, I'll explain, you're my Lois Lane. Oh, my love, can't make head nor tail of passion. Oh, my love, let's set sail for seas of passion now. Ooh, baby bat your Spanish eyes. Sierra smile, legs that go on for miles and miles. Oh, see those legs, man. Miles and miles. I said, oh, my love, I can't make head nor tail. Sail for seas of passion. Oh, my love, I can't make head nor tail of passion. Oh, my love, so let's set sail for seas of passion now. I'm taking a hike to Tahiti.
We shall have to get some people from the green hydrogen community on the show. Actually, talking about people who we need to get on the show, is one of them is Vinnie Egan. Did you see the Google Doodle yesterday?
Oh, I loved that. I was stoked that it was Vinnie. That was so neat, eh?
Yeah. So the Google Doodle yesterday was a celebration of Waitangi. It was a kapa haka. People making out the letters. But interesting, during the day they posted several, you know, explanations for each of the different people, and it was just amazing amount of work has gone in and thought about who the people were, and it was something else. I don't think it's still up, but it's beyond the if you do a search for Waitangi Day Google 2024, I'm sure you'll find it, and it is cool. And there's quite a lot about it on Maui Studios.
That's neat.
We shall have to get him. We'll have to get Vinnie in on the show.
It would be so good to get Vinnie in on the show.
Yeah, and gives him lots of good stuff to write about in his practitioner thesis.
Absolutely. How's he going with that?
Well, I think so. He's looking at trying to find the sweet spot. He's trying to find what does Kaupapa Maori creative technology look like.
Oh, I like that.
So working at the sort of the really cutting edge of technology and creativity and doing it in a Kaupapa Maori way.
That's so cool. That's beautiful. We need more of that kind of work because that's the inspiration for our young people.
You were mentioning before about action research. I've got a diagram that I need to send you, which is action research, but recognising the messiness of it.
Yes, and embracing the messiness of it.
Because my difficulty with action research is that the diagram, so the cycle, think, do, act, whatever it is, so oversimplifies how those proper cycles are, and the cycles overlap, and they're at different time scales, and they feed backwards and forwards from each other, and things go wrong and things go right, and you're thinking about it, and I've got a diagram which I found the other day that really nicely represents that messiness, and I think having a diagram for it validates that it's okay to be a bit, for it to be a bit messy.
Yeah, and that's what I love about it for use for young people is that like their lives are messy and their thoughts are chaotic and they're still coming to terms with how things work in the bigger, wider world. And so, what better representation for their life is that? So I like that idea, Sam. That's a great idea. Having a better diagram, something that celebrates the messiness.
Yeah, I found a quote from Crane, I think it is. Life is messy, and so must be our data.
Yeah, exactly.
And all the attempts to sort of constrain our whole sort of research methodologies. We're missing the interesting stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Embrace the messy, I say.
Embrace the messy. Actually, that would be a good description for my office today. Sometimes it's really tidy, and then sometimes it explodes. I think it explodes when I've got lots of projects on, and it's sort of that the pile here, and there's a pile here, and but people do point out that it's gotten a bit of out of control.
Uh-oh. People.
It needs this. Let's have Bob Marley stir it up. Maybe that's what needs to happen to my office.
I think so.
Of the forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi arohanui kia koutou katawahau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars, in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very challenging, so it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the care, the love, the support, the trust, the listening ears, the holding hands, the walks in nature, all these things that we know we can do for our loved ones that really help. I've been having a wonderful time, obviously, and we just went to Rokioro, Stewart Island, and played a show down there, which was really cool. And I had only ever been to Mason's Bay, which is, you know, not doesn't have a town. And I was doing marum grass research. This was many years ago now, maybe 20 years ago. And I always thought that the pilot was really showing off to us, you know, when he flew into Mason's Bay, because he was doing all the loop-de-loops and things like that. But it turns out, no, that it's just these very intense winds. And he may well have been showing off to us as well. But anyway, we were walking along the track and we saw a kiwi during the day, and then we went to the hut and I had to climb up these big sand dunes for hours and measure their rhizomes and measure their underground network. It was a really interesting project because, of course, Marin was introduced to Aotearoa New Zealand and has outcompeted Pinga or Pico and a native grass, dune grass, grass sedge grass. But yeah, I mean, Marin was amazing. And when I worked at the aquarium, it was my job to look at these parts of the marum grass that had been transported over the sea, you know, and how long would it take for them to germinate based on that. And it was more than 80 days they could be in the water and then go into land and start sprouting and things. So yeah, really incredible life forms have found their way here. But of course our native life forms are the most important. And at my heart's home workplace, Orokonui Eco Sanctuary, been having a wonderful time because this time of year all the baby birds are out. So your baby korimako, your baby tui, all of these little tiny babies just chirping away, and then you see a little glimpse of them and they have the lovely light flesh around their mouth, and that's so mummy and daddy can see them to feed them. So it's a beautiful time of year, and I really hope for you you're noticing these lovely changes around you in the environment. The other thing I'm seeing a lot of this year is masting. So we're seeing a lot of huge flower sessions for Takaoka, the cabbage tree. It's flowering several times over. So is the harakihi, so is the flax. And this means, of course, abundant food for all the birds, which is really important. And when we were on Rakiura, Stewart Island, it was really interesting to go and meet all the plants and, you know, see how much variation there is. And of course, because it's colder down there, kapaka, for example, has even fatter leaves, even thicker leaves, because it's so cold down there. And we had a wonderful time playing our show, and then on the boat back home, oh my goodness, it's like nothing I've ever experienced in my life. So it was like, I don't know if you've seen the film Interstellar, but these huge waves, and we were, you know, there were jellyfish coming up to the windows, and the boat was, you know, we thought the boat was going to flip over the whole time, but the man driving it really enjoyed it, I think, all the excitement, and I found it very exciting. But yes, so I really hope for you that you're finding the excitement, the joy, the newness, the possibility in these daily moments, and recognizing yourself as the strong adventurer that you are, mapping and creating the life that you want for yourself. And of course, for me, it's a great honour and privilege to be here with you and have this time with you. I want to thank Sam and the whole Blown Bubbles team for having me. And I'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We don't have a guest because we're too busy chatting. Why are you in Dunedin?
Oh, I've come down to do a workshop for a couple of days, one that I should have done at the beginning of last year when I started teaching at the university, called Introduction to University Teaching. So 2.5 days of listening to some people who've been teaching for a long time, sharing what they know, awesome wisdom and experience. I managed to muddle my way through a year without that. So it'd be really interesting to go in there now because I don't really still don't have my head around the systems. That's the problem of being remote. is that there's a lot of systems that I still don't know how to use, so I should learn how to use those. And now I'm the coordinator for the master's paper, Masters of Contemporary Issues and Sustainability. So I'm coordinating the online paper for that because I loved teaching that last year. And our young people today blow my mind, what they come up with and how they express it and their view of things and their fearlessness. They're so brave.
Mm. Over the holidays, my way of doing reading, as you know, is to look for diagrams.
Yeah.
So I've just published a blog post with another 100 diagrams of sustainability.
Holy, how many are you up to now?
1,000.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm about halfway through. So what I do is I when I'm just reading stuff, basically if it doesn't have a diagram in it, I'm not reading it.
Yeah, fair enough.
Is my rule. I'm working on the basis that there is just so much being produced that you have to ignore a lot of it.
Mm.
So if my decision is I'm reading stuff with diagrams, that's as valid as saying I'm only reading things on this particularly narrow subject area.
Speaking of reading, you're also reading what you spoke about it yesterday. I've never heard of this book that you're reading at the moment.
A Cain's Jawbone.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
It's very cool. It's written in 1930. It's 100 pages long, and it says these pages may not be in the right order. In fact, it's even got on the, as it's printed, it's got a little scissors icon and a dotted line to encourage you, even if it's just metaphorically, to cut the pages out because they could be in any order. And so the task of reading it is to figure out the order of the pages because there are 6 murders in the 100 pages. But by putting the stories in the right right order. The pages in the right order, you can work out who the murders are and why and so on.
That sounds amazing.
And apparently it's been solved 3 times in the last nearly 100 years.
Only 3 times. I'm sure you'll solve it.
It was written by the person that invented cryptic crosswords.
Right.
So as I'm reading it, it's, and I was reading it mostly in a tent. There's someone with a slightly strange name and you think, hang on, that's probably an anagram for something. And I'm suspecting, because it keeps in all of the stuff about it and in the blurb of the book, it talks about how well read this person was and how aware he was of every other, you know, story that was around at the time. So I have a sneaking suspicion that there will be big clues in the fact that if it mentions a particular novel, then the scenario in that novel is a big clue to,
right,
to something. So that's the kind of, I don't think it's a sit down and you know, even if you could power through the reading of it in a few days, it's an obsession people talk about. So I'm kind of just getting into, just starting to scratch the surface of that obsession level of it.
Oh, I want that to be my new obsession. I want to read it so bad. So I'm going to go and find a copy.
Nearly going out. We've got time for one more and then quick chat. Mr. T and the Minions, Funky Pumpkins.
Funky pumpkin, got chasing a funky pumpkin, oh. never mind now when she's in the driving chair. No wicked stepmother waits and does behind the wheel. Just burning rubber and tires screaming at the heels. Oh.
I was talking to your cousin yesterday, who is doing the interviews for her doctorate, and it reminded me that I think the most important thing in asking questions in interviews for research or for anything is to be asking questions for which you don't know the answer. And it's kind of like you hear almost as a... almost as a sort of a mantra that people have, don't ask any questions unless you know the answer. And I just think that's the opposite of what we should be doing. We should be asking questions we don't know the answer to.
Yes. Otherwise, we're not really researching, are we? We're just affirming.
So we need questions that generate stuff that are surprises.
Yeah. And that's, I love that work that Alice is doing. What she's doing is she's capturing a whole history that isn't currently recorded and that we run a high risk of losing, because the kaumātua that she's working with, our poas and toas, you know, they're getting on in their years now and they hold so much history, and especially in our weaving traditions, which is what her work is, that it would just be just such a tragedy to lose that knowledge. Like, for example, if you go and get that harakeke there, then the muka from that is going to be like this. But if you get that harakeke there, that muka is better for this job. You know, like it's just this that knowledge that they just have that they've, you know, gained through the years from their own experience or they learned from their own teachers, that all gets lost if no one's interested in asking them about it.
So... yes, we had the flax garden that we rescued when they had to take them out of the botanic gardens. Mm. And then they got moved. They moved somewhere else. I'm not sure where they are. But the other place they got taken was up to Orokanui.
Oh, and that's good.
There's a whole. It's not like two species. There's a whole lot of different flax that are recognised by weavers.
And each of them does a different job, but they also do a really important job in our environment. Harakeke cleans dioxin out of the earth, and it sequesters carbon, and it's an incredible tool. And Alice was just telling me that her mum bought an old chair and was restoring it, and when she opened up the fabric to create a pattern to sew new fabric, it was stuffed with harakeke fibres.
Cool.
You know, like it was just used for so many things. Mm. And yeah, we take for granted that, you know, they're just there and they, you know, they're great for birds and bugs and what have you, but they've got so many other things that they do.
Right. I think we've run out of time. Oh. I had so many more songs lined up. We're going out to Sam and the Womp.
Oh, Sam and the Womp. If you're Sam, does that make me a womp?
I couldn't possibly comment.
I'm the cat with the bass and drum going around like bum bum bum. With the bass and drum going around like bum bum bum. What's grooving? I'm moving. I like your style of lumping. How charming, just the rapper. Load him up and eat that snapper. I was 16 pints of rum and then I go bum bum. Growing up in the dark in the night, and so I go. Oh, I brought a pie in my pocket, pie in my pocket, and I am a sipping. No got life, no got style, no got nothing on my mind. But I'm so cool and I'm so groovy. When I go bum bum bum. We'll be right back.
been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic, which is still Tiki Panga. We broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook.
In the gap with the bass and drum, going around like bum bum bum. What's grooving? I'm moving. I like your style of womping. How charming, just a rapper. Load him up and eat that snapper. I want 16 pints of rum and then I go bum bum. Glowing up in the dark and at night, and so I go oh ah 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 ah. I brought a pie in my pocket, pie in my pocket, and I am a sucker. No got life, no got style, no got nothing on my mind, but I'm so cool and I'm so groovy. When I go bum bum bum.
From Tahu McKenzie. I'm sending my answer to Bay Dunedin with Mawira Karatai in Oakville, Dunedin. But that was Blowing Bubbles, celebrating our 504th show. We hope you enjoyed the show.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.